apologised and said another reading was being taken. BBC News.
In an hour, Mariella Frostrop will talk to the author of Brick Lane, Monica Ali, about her new book, a novel inspired by the life of Princess Diana. That's open book at 4 o'clock. Before that, here on BBC Radio 4, we round off our classic serial, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's thrilling adventure set in an Amazonian plateau where time, it seems, has stood still.
The Lost World by Arthur Conan Doyle, dramatised by Chris Harold. In part one of Arthur Conan Doyle's The Lost World, Edward Malone, a journalist in search of adventure, encounters the fiery Professor Challenger.
I'm going to pick you up, carry you down the corridor, and throw you down the steps.
Challenger claims that deep in the Amazonian forest, he has found an isolated plateau where evolution has been suspended and dinosaurs still live.
A stegosaurus!
Understand this. The Amazon isn't just a remote country. It is a dozen times bigger than Europe. Another world within our world, where anything is possible.
Challenger's academic reputation is in danger. He puts his critics to the test. He will make another expedition to the Amazon. Legendary explorer Lord John Roxton joins the expedition.
Know how to shoot a bit, know the jungle a bit, if you care to have me.
Rival scientist, the ambitious Dr. Diana Summerlee, joins the expedition.
Your science lacks proof. Your evidence is hazy. You are not to be believed.
And Malone has let himself in for more adventure than he ever bargained for as the four explorers set off down the Amazon River.
The bridge! It's gone!
We are trapped, as alone as if we had been dropped on the moon. No way down.
Now there is a new world of dangers to face. The Lost World. Episode 2. Our eyes have seen great wonders.
Come, come, my friends. No despondency. It was impossible to get up here. Yet, we are up here. Impossible to descend? Surely not. Things will seem different in the morning.
As I rouse myself at dawn, my eyes fall upon a most singular phenomenon. The right leg of my trousers has slipped up, exposing a few inches of skin above my sock. On this, there rests... What is it? A large, purplish grape. I lean forward to pick it off, and to my horror, it bursts between my finger and thumb, squirting blood in every direction.
Most interesting. A blood tick of quite unusually large size. As yet, I believe unclassified. Let us name it Ixodes Malona. The very small inconvenience of being bitten, my young friend, cannot, I am sure, weigh with you against the glorious privilege of having your name inscribed in the annals of zoology.
Pity you had to crush it, Malone.
Filthy thing.
But no doubt we can secure another specimen.
No doubt at all, Challenger. One has just disappeared behind your shirt collar.
God, help me off with these!
Our first foray into the unknown. Thick forest, far darker than the Amazon jungle.
These trees, I've never seen them before.
Nor I, Mr. Malone. Well, only in fossil form. These are conifera and cycadaceous plants which have long passed away in our world.
By long, you mean...
60 million years.
A minute later, the stream widens and the ground becomes boggy.
Heavens.
What?
The trail of the father of all birds.
A three-toed track in the mud.
And what of this?
Like a five-fingered human hand. I've seen it before in the Wealden clay fossils. It's a creature walking erect upon three-toed feet and occasionally putting one of its five-fingered forepaws upon the ground. Not a bird, my dear Roxton.
What then?
A reptile. A dinosaur.
This earth is fresh. Whatever made this print pass this way, not millions of years ago, but minutes ago. Malone? Dr. Summerlee? Your guns to the ready, please.
Oh, dear God.
Who needs God when you have bees?
Two adults, three young ones. Even the babies are twice as tall as a man. While the two large ones, slate-colored skin with scales like a lizard's, They balanced themselves upon their broad, powerful tails and their huge, three-toed hind feet, while with their small, five-fingered front feet, they pull down the branches upon which they browse.
Iguanodons! Iguanodons! What will they say back in England of this?
Dr. Summerlee, I will tell you with great confidence what they will say back in England.
Voices down, please, everyone.
They will say that you are a liar and a charlatan, exactly as you and others said of me.
They will have my independent record.
Which will look very different in London than in these latitudes.
Surely, some sort of specimen.
A specimen? Of those creatures?
Extraordinary. Now, steady. They're moving. Has the wind turned? Yes, they're sniffing. Is it us they're smelling? Pray not. Move back. Back into the undergrowth. We are on mighty thin ice. Silence. All and one. Now, there they go. Let us return to our starting point and make a proper camp.
And so we do, under Roxton's supervision, in a clearing dominated by a huge ginkgo tree. A zareba, made of thick spiked brushwood, with a gate.
Well, an impressive construction. But it wouldn't do much to keep out the creatures we saw today.
It will defend us from smaller animals, but yes, you're right. Indeed, even our guns would merely have bought us time to run.
A question.
Yes, Mr. Malone.
We are on the edge of the plateau, and when we travelled inwards, we travelled downhill, did we not?
Correct.
Suggesting that where we are now is one of the higher points of the plateau. A rim rather than an edge.
From my observations, yes, I dare say you're right.
This ginkgo tree, the way its branches spread so wide across the clearing, its enormously thick trunk, might its height be proportional to its width?
Lucid reasoning. Where does your argument take us?
Make a stirrup for me, Lord John.
Oh, I see. Dashed enterprising.
If I can just... Look, Roxton, a boost, please. The first branch, got the measure of you now. Surely there is every chance that the top of this tree, growing from an elevated position, could be like a watchtower with views commanding the whole plateau.
Capital! Always knew Malone had a brain to him, Dr. Summerlee?
You bring out the best in him, Challenger.
Oh, you think so?
Up I go. The voices of my companions start to fade. The tree is enormous. I'm lost in its dark greenery. Upwards. Ever upwards. When will I break into the light?
Can you see anything yet?
If I can just get myself...
I use a creeper to help me.
Some sort of obstruction above me. It's moving. What?
Nearly. But not quite. I have my balance. I must record this without a second's delay. Face. Nearly but not quite human. It burst out at me from the leaves. And there it goes. Not quite a man, but not wholly an ape.
You reached the top of the tree.
I did.
This sketch you made. Extraordinary. The nose flattened, the lower jaw projecting.
Thick, orange hair, beetling eyebrows, dark, malign eyes.
Steady, Mr. Malone. Eyes are just eyes. Sacks of jelly. Dark, yes, but malign or kindly, for that matter. No, that's quite unscientific.
You're nitpicking, Dr. Summerlee. Young Malone here has found a whole new race of...
Ape men. That's what it was, an ape man.
Not ape men, please. From what you have said, and the place we find ourselves upon, hominids. A member of our human family, which was once diverse, but of which only Homo sapiens remains.
Wretches. This plateau is a naturalist's gold mine, so to speak.
And what did you find at the top?
The plateau is shaped like a shallow funnel, all the sides sloping down to a considerable lake in the center. 10 miles in circumference, perhaps. Signs of life in the lake, creatures, though I could not see them in any detail.
Ah, yes. Signs of life, creatures. Well done, Malone.
On the far side of the lake, basalt cliffs, and in them a series of dark holes. The mouths of caves, I think.
Caves? Well, perhaps one of those caves was Maplewhite's way out.
Yes, Lord John, but we have so much to explore, so much to learn. Dr. Summerlee, I perceive some sort of thought has passed through your brain.
A hitherto unknown group of hominids. I see the scientific importance, but our resources are so limited, our situation so precarious.
Living hominids, living, that's the point. You're not just adding an addendum to a textbook. You would be rewriting the textbook. It would be your textbook. Something that might hold a certain interest for you?
Time to build the fire.
My discoveries up the ginkgo tree have excited me, and sleep seems to be impossible. The various sounds of the night, they too keep me aroused. How gratifying that I've made an impression on my companions. The full moon lights up our camp. Lord John, wrapped up in a poncho, sleeps silently, something of a contrast to Professor Challenger. By the fire, Diana Summerlee is on guard, rifle on her knees. And as I study the outline of her face, carved in marble by the moonlight, so wonderfully serene, I realize this isn't serenity. She's fallen asleep. A thought comes to me. Suppose I steal softly away. Suppose I explore further. I'm back at breakfast with some record of the place. A closer view of that central lake. What a three-column article for the paper. And so, I go out into the forest. The trees grow so thickly that I can hardly see the moonlight.
Oh, this is a terrible mistake.
Darkness. I never thought I was afraid of the dark. What vanity has led me to this? Panic. Growing. Can't stop it. I see it now. I'm not really a courageous man, in love with danger. But I have an overpowering fear of seeming afraid. How little we know ourselves. Can I go back to the camp? No. Pride trumps everything. Silvery bright light now. The Iguanodon glade. Blessed relief. And the moon shows me a path. At last. A gleam of water. The lake. I climb a block of stone. An excellent view across the water. On the far side, yes, those are the cave mouths I saw from the tree. But now they are disks of reddish light. The light twinkles. These are fires which surely can only have been lit by the hand of man. Below me, two creatures like large armadillos drink the river. Their long, flexible tongues shoot in and out as they lap. Then, where have I seen that ungainly shape? The arched back with triangular fringes along it. That strange bird-like head held close to the ground. The Stegosaurus. The very creature which Maple White preserved in his sketchbook. For 5 minutes, he is so close that by stretching out my hand, I could touch him. Then he lumbers away. Time to set back. What in the name? This creature, whatever it might be, I know with a horrid, utterly instinctive certainty hunted my primeval ancestors. Just as it is now hunting me.
What?
Steady on. You fell asleep, Dr. Summerlee.
I don't know what to say. How shameful.
It's the best of us, do you know. Oh. Remember once on the plains of Kenya. Well, never mind. It doesn't matter now. There's nothing you could have done.
What do you mean? And where's Malone?
Challenger, wake up, man.
Huh? What the devil?
Oh, quietly, if you can contrive it. Malone, adventurous spirit. He must have taken off for a spot of exploring on his own. Lucky fellow in the circumstances.
Just what is it, Roxton?
You hear it? Comrades, I think we're in rather serious trouble.
Not a sound. Not a movement. Perhaps my imagination. No. God help me. A great dark shadow disengages itself from the forest and hops out into the clear moonlight. The beast springs along in an erect position upon powerful hind legs, while its front ones are held bent in front of it. It looks straight at me, and I freeze. Surely it must see me. But no, It turns away. Then it drops forward upon its forepaws and brings its nose to the ground. It doesn't need to see me. It is smelling out my trail. My limbs ache. My chest heaves. Surely I've thrown it off. No such thing. Its head is cocked. It can see me now as well as smell me. I cannot help it. But I look behind me, perhaps to look my own death in the eye. And something impossible happens. The creature disappears, like a villain in a pantomime. The analogy is apt. But the earth opened up beneath the creature. It has fallen into a trap, I realize. I must have leapt clear over it. A pit concealed by brushwood, 15 feet deep, perhaps. I improvise a torch. And there is the creature. It has fallen onto a sharpened stake. What a stench. Rotten meat. This place is a kind of killing jar. They must cut the dead animals away to clear the stake for the next who blunders in. This place is surely the work of men, like ourselves, with sharp-edged minds that outmatch all the brute strength of the dinosaurs. I am desperate to return to the security of the camp, to my friends.
Ready, Summerlee?
Ready, Roxton. If only I knew where to aim.
Patience. Keep your gun sight swinging through 180 degrees. 90 degrees left, 90 degrees right. Where I showed you on the liner.
Are we in great danger?
Great danger? Good Lord, yes.
Roxton!
Leave the fighting to us, Professor.
I've been listening to them. I think they're going to come at us from above, from the ginkgo tree.
The Express Nitro! No mistaking it!
The Zareba. Still and quiet. The gate is open. Our effects are scattered over the ground. Our fire is ashes, and the earth is dark with blood.
Diana! Diana Summerlee!
Of my companions, no sign.
John Roxton! Answer me for pity's sake! Challenger! Summerlee! Challenger!
Damn you brutes! Be careful how you carry the lady! Sorry to the two of you. I wasn't fast enough.
You did all any man could do. There were too many of them. They rained down.
A lot of impressive assault. Organization and so forth. They're bros. Malone's description was accurate. I would call them Dryopithecus.
Aura! Pithecanthropus?
Let me think. Yes, I'm prepared to entertain that possibility.
What do they have in mind for us?
I'm intensely curious on that point, too. I would have expected them to simply dash our brains out on the spot.
Look, we're coming out of the forest. Steady! What in the name of...
A village, but so primitive. As though we've travelled to the dawn of mankind.
Prefer to be at a rather more advanced point myself. The cocktail hour, for instance. They seem to be fascinated by you, Challenger.
They keep touching me.
Particularly that one. Hey! It's your chest that interests him. Apart from its breadth, forgive the personal nature of my observations, it's remarkably hairy. A big fellow, possibly some sort of leader.
He's touching his chest, and then touching, rubbing mine.
He sees something of himself in you. Rub his chest back.
What?
Challenger, go on. Finger through the hair. You're grooming each other. Groom him, Challenger.
I am Regius Professor of Natural Sciences at the University of London.
There you are, then. Right man for the job. Carry on grooming and drop your eyes. Mark of respect. And whatever you do, don't turn your head, because they're all watching you. They're enthralled. And more to the point, Summerlee is sliding away ever so gently. They've forgotten about her. In another minute, God save her, she might just make it to the forest.
He's getting impatient. He's tiring of this.
Of course he is. He hasn't got much of a brain, poor fellow. You must divert him, Challenger.
What?
Go, Diana. Don't look back. Save yourself. Go!
Divert him?
Ow! You! Don't hit him back. He wants to play. That was just a tap. He's got the mind of a child, but he's stronger than you. How would you divert a child?
Edith and I, we have not been blessed.
Challenger, do you want to live? Your very considerable brain. Use it, please.
When I was younger, I had a certain enthusiasm for the music hall.
Yes?
I may be a little rusty, but... roaming in the gloaming on the bonny banks of Clyde. Roaming in the gloaming wi' my lassie by my side. When the sun has gone to rest, that's the time that I love best. Oh, it's lovely roaming in the gloaming. Hey!
You have them entranced. Damn it, I'm enjoying it too.
Steady, Malone. Sift the evidence. 3 shots. Whatever happened quickly. An attack by dinosaurs. Surely my companions would be dead. I am too tired to wrestle with the problem. Sleep comes fast, and I awake in cold grey light in the most extraordinary way. 2 grey-green eyes looking into mine.
Malone, wake up. Wake up! Every moment counts!
What? Your face?
Blood from a scalp wound. Now pick up a rifle and all the cartridges you can. That's it, move! Don't start to talk or think. Move or we're all done for. Follow me! Gently. Gently. What do you see through the glasses?
The dwelling places. Just as you described, on the edge of the cliffs. 50 or so of the hominids. And there are Challenger and Roxton, my word. Challenger is stripped to the waist. What's happening now?
What's taking their fancy?
2 figures. Indians, like our Brazilian bearers, but how can that be so? Being manhandled by the hominids.
One of them's broken away. He's running. But he's not fast enough. They're catching up. Oh, he's desperate, poor fellow. But they have him. Oh, they're wrenching his arm right out of its socket.
And now what? Have they become quiet and concentrated? We have to get closer.
They're taking the first of the Indians to the edge of the cliff. And I think they intend us to follow.
Prod me like that again, you hairy brute, and you'll regret it. It seems they want me rather than you for whatever comes next.
There's too many of them. Too strong for me. Sorry, Roxton.
Good luck, Challenger. Hope to blazes you see this through.
Oh, they've taken Roxton and the Indian to the brink of the cliff.
What do you see through the glasses?
They're picking the Indian up. Throw him over. See, I guess, whether he's merely dashed to pieces on the rocks or skewered on the canes. They're swinging him, as you might swing someone at a birthday party. 1, 2, 3. Oh, then, ghastly, over the edge he goes. Now they're taking Roxton. Oh, by heaven, he puts up a struggle.
Mr. Malone. Ready your gun.
Your plan?
We shoot the hominids. Closest to Roxton first. I shall take the one holding him. Then we fire into the thick of them and keep firing until we disperse them and rescue our companions. This makes me sick, but this is how it must be.
Every inch of the way! You'll have to fight me! Yes! That's what we call a right hook at my stage of evolution! Oh, the stink of ammonia! The hair thick with grease! Oh, this is not how I want to end!
Diana Summerlee's face is a mask. Utter stillness and concentration. What is she thinking?
Now, focus, Summerlee. The legs. The hominid crumples. Roxton rolls free. The hominid is still alive, reaching for him. A shot to the head. But Roxton's head is in the way. But the creature is going to break Roxton's neck. One shot. One chance. Get this right, Summerlee. The hominid is dead. But Roxton doesn't move. What have I done? Oh, swing 90 degrees to the left.
I rejoice in the slaughter. What havoc we wreak. The hominids gesticulate, scream, rush in a howling crowd to the trees, leaving the ground behind them spotted with their stricken comrades.
Enough. Stop. Stop. No more shooting.
I expect the second of the Indians to make good his escape. But no. He looks about the scene of the massacre and at us with a strange, impassive dignity. Something childlike, too.
Dr. Summerlee. What is it? Say something. Diana Summerlee. I'm John Roxton. You saved my life about 20 seconds ago. Much appreciated. Please give me the gun. We're safe now. Hellish, wasn't it? Just. Wherever you have gone to, you must try and come back. Can't just stand there all frozen up like a statue. Me and you will be the talk of the Amazon. Going to take your thumb off the stock. Forefinger off the trigger. Middle finger off the trigger guard. Finger by finger. Gently does it. Left hand now. I'm taking those fingers one by one away from the breech. Last one. Shot and a half, by the way, Summerlee. But that's enough shooting. Don't you think? Safety back on. Good.
The notches on your gun. What did you do on the Putumayo River, John Roxton?
Dr. Summerlee! Malone! You pulled us out of the jaws of death. A timely intervention indeed. European science is in your debt. My disappearance, I think it's fair to say, would have left an appreciable gap in modern zoological history.
The music hall, too, would have suffered a loss.
And Roxton! Down there, in the canes, speared through. The fellow's writhing.
Roxton moves so fast you would miss it if you coughed.
Don't know whether I sent him to some Indian heaven, but I do know he's out of his agony. And what of this gentleman?
The surviving Indian is walking towards us. Something about his bearing.
There's a certain intelligence in his eyes. He doesn't seem to be alarmed by us at all. Probably never encountered civilized man before. What an opportunity. We may be able to study prototypical speech at first hand, eh, Summerlee? I shall attempt contact. Me! Challenger,
I offer greetings and thank you to you all. The time had come, but you had changed the time. I thank Dr. Summerlee, my tribes.
What a thing to behold.
Thanks you.
Challenger struggles for articulation and fails.
I am Kerois. You do not understand me?
We understand you perfectly, Kerois. We're just a little surprised.
Your tribe? You came here from the jungle? From below?
We have been here, out to Juruá, the higher place, since our tribe's memory begun. Now, oh dear.
What is it?
When the brute took us, I lost something of a great price.
I understand. Sorry for your friend, Kerois.
His time had come. That was not what I lost. Where is my remembering book? Oh, dear.
Remembering book?
Let's think. Kerois and his friend were seized by the hominids in the vicinity of those rather spectacular blooming bushes, whose exact nomenclature I will leave to Dr. Summerlee. Now, I would suggest... Let me pursue this thought. Yes, it seems entirely possible. Keep your eyes open for a leather-bound notebook. Quarto. Much faded by now.
How can you possibly leap to such a conclusion, Challenger?
Not a leap. A deduction, Dr. Summerlee. A testable prediction.
A book like this.
You found it! I thank you! I thank you!
How has it come to pass? And even I found it surprising at first that Kerois speaks English. Idiosyncratic, but serviceable. I mean, what's the simplest possible explanation? And this remembering book, what else could it be? But may I, Kerois? I shall be very careful.
A sketchbook, just like you showed me.
Stegosaurus. A flying creature I cannot identify. A giant snake.
Please?
Oh, yes, of course. Here it is.
From one person, Kerois learned a taste for rudimentary sketching, for setting down memories in a spare sketchbook given to him by that person, who also gave him a basic grounding in the English language.
Maple White. Yeah.
As I was about to say.
Maple White.
Maple White, yes.
Maple White was my teacher. But he would not stay. You. Will you be my teacher?
We'll teach you whatever we can, Kerois, if you will show us your world.
And you. Will you stay?
We'll stay.
We'll stay. As long as we can.
Come now, quickly. My tribe, they come. I feel it. They look for me. Please, now.
Kerois leads us at a swift pace through the forest, with which he seems intimately familiar. We move downhill towards the lake. We cross the path down which I ran in terror a night ago, now innocent in the daylight.
Seems pretty quiet to me.
They come. I know it.
Did you see that?
Well, you don't reel many of those in on the banks of the Itchen.
Something on the far side. But I can't make it out. You have the glasses, Malone.
Movement. Yes. Canoes. A dozen or more of them heading straight for us.
The rowers rise from their seats, waving their paddles madly in the air. Then they bend to their work once more as they fly across the water and join us. The Indians of the plateau leave their canoes and kneel upon the sand.
Strange how correct are the instincts of the natural man.
You have the wrong end of the cultural stick, Challenger. It's not us they're kneeling to. It's to him, Kerois.
So when he talked about his tribe, he literally meant it. He's the chief. So young.
See the spears and battle axes? I think they came here ready for vengeance if tragedy had befallen their young chief. And look at them. I think they still intend violence.
The Indians stand. Kerois moves towards us.
In the name of my father's spirit, my people say, what's the use of returning to our own dwellings? Sooner or later, we must act. Our comrades have been murdered countless times. Here we are, assembled and ready. And we have you, powerful people, to fight for us. Who have the gods on their side and command thunders and lightning.
Kerois' eyes drift towards our rifles.
When shall we have such a chance again?
You mean...
Destroy the brutes for all time.
Kill them? Oh, these are specimens of incalculable value.
We must consider what you say, Kerois. Please give our respects to your tribe. We will speak of this in the morning.
Kerois bows and goes. The plateau Indians begin to light fires and erect bivouacs.
Dr. Summerlee, we can have no part in the massacre of a species. We didn't come to this place to disrupt the balance of life.
I agree, but by the simple fact of coming here, that's what we've already done.
I have no wish for slaughter. But Challenger, you seem positively tender-hearted towards a bunch of pithecanthropus... tough classics master, pithecanthropi, whose idea of sport is skewering a fellow on 10 foot of bamboo.
They are our family, kith and kin, like it or not. You, sir, made me see that with some force. Opinion, Malone?
I've seen and done enough killing. Surely we are all in agreement.
I don't think Corois is necessarily going to accept our decision as easily as we make it.
Well, now that surely is speculation.
Trust me, Challenger. This is politics. In the name of my father's spirit, Corois said. I think Corois has inherited his position from his father, recently deceased. He's scarcely more than a boy, not just in years, but emotionally. Missing his blood father and missing his strange surrogate father, Maple White. Mooning over that sketchbook.
I think you're rather harsh on the lad.
Kirois's tribe, they see things more clearly than he does. They want our thunder and lightning. They see where power lies.
Are we to bow to the wishes of these people?
Not at all. Remember, the gods are on our side. Awake, Malone. I'm not surprised.
I've been lying here trying to conjure up the right descriptive phrase. Heavy table being dragged across a rough stone floor.
Malone, in your heart, do you think we shall ever leave this plateau?
Between us, our resources of knowledge and ingenuity and bravery. Good heavens, yes. Am I naive?
I apologize. Foolish question. Oh, this place. I am so tired. I feel lost.
Diana.
Malone. Now, what is that?
The moonlight is strong. Great rolling curves of a snake-like creature appear from the lake.
Challenger.
What?
Look.
It's like the head of a serpent. Plesiosaurus. A freshwater plesiosaurus.
For a moment, we glimpse it. Powerful, but astonishingly graceful, too.
Plesiosaurus. We are blessed, my dear Challenger, above all zoologists since the world began.
Kirois stands before us. His followers are ranged behind him.
Kirois. The four of us have spoken to our gods.
As we had worked out earlier, Challenger, Roxton and I raise our rifles to our chests. We cock them.
The gods ask your mercy for the brutes. They have a part to play in this, your high place. And our gods wish to visit you and live among you through us. Tell your people this, Kirois. And remember, our gods are yours, Kirois. With all their powers of lightning and thunder, so long as you keep faith with us.
Come then, with us, across the water.
Good heavens, Dr. Summerlee. Quite a performance.
Bit of threat, bit of promise, and a good dose of mumbo jumbo. Just like one of our Senate meetings, really.
The Plateau Indians race through the lake. The canoe bucks, and for a moment.
Sorry.
No, your arm. Sorry, my leg.
Let us disentangle ourselves. Decorum. We are emissaries of the gods.
Her limbs against mine. Her warm breath on my cheek. The curve of her. Only felt for a small second. Remembered for a lifetime. And now, on the far side of the lake, we are honored guests of the Plateau Indians, and our journey takes a new turn. Under deep blue skies, Challenger and Summerlee are in a scientific Eden. There is no end to the discoveries that the woods and the water yield. And Challenger makes good on a promise.
This way. Shh. Shh. Be very quiet. You. It's your way. You make much noise.
Well, I suppose that's not the first time that's been said. What is it you have for me?
Slide forward. Move aside the bush. Slowly. Dear Lord. The broken shells. Oviparous, not viviparous. What a thing. Wingspan, 9 inches.
Those little beaks.
The mother. She
senses something. Yes, I rather suspect she does.
orderly retreat.
Allow me to amend that. As Roxton would say, run like hell!
I thank you, Kerois. From the depths of my heart, pterodactyls hatching.
The heart has depths?
I shall try to explain.
The word you said, oviparous?
Oviparous and viviparous.
You tell me what they mean?
Of course. I have to explain about Latin.
Latin. I would like to know about Latin. This would be a language. There are many languages. So you tell me.
Kerois, there's no holding you. Do you want to learn about absolutely everything?
To learn about everything in the world? Yes, that would be a happiness.
Yet, sunlit Eden is not without its darkness.
You know we're being watched.
Oh, the Indians are always about. But what of it?
No. I mean, all of us are being watched. All the time. Two of them, well concealed in the big bushes yonder. I stalked Challenger and Kerois to the pterodactyl hatchery, and I was not the only stalker. They, too, were being watched.
The Indians hold us in high esteem.
Oh, that they do. Just how high? Well, I have something we should all see.
We were making some critical measurements of incubation times, and you've dragged us away to see what?
They're building a hut on a grand scale.
A hut with a fence round it.
Kerois, what is this place? This is for you. This is your home. My tribe built it for you.
But we have homes. Far away, homes that soon we must go to.
My tribe, they want you to stay.
Companions of the gods, eh? We may have oversold ourselves.
I'm a fool. My damned arrogance. Kerois, you must understand we don't belong here.
I see things more clearly now. Whenever Roxton and I have tried to find a way off the plateau, the Indians smile. But somehow there isn't enough vine to make rope by which we could descend. Not enough wood to build another bridge to the pinnacle. And they smile and smile.
You told me nothing of this, Kerois.
My tribe, they are strong.
Your people overruled you. I understand. Hard to be a lone voice. Well, I believe we must act before the Indians put their plans for us in motion. Kerois, will you help us?
What we had to do, we did quickly and secretly, since even at this last hour, we fear the Indians, whatever Kerois' goodwill towards us, might hold us back. Kerois slides into the camp like a shadow.
No. Why, my tribe is eating.
Challenger and Summerlee have container upon container of specimens, which give us much labor as we ascend the path that leads to the caves. Kerois has a crude map, which he consults.
Should we not reconnoiter first?
No. I think we have only one chance to leave this place, and this is it.
This particular package, Dr. Summerlee?
My collection of dried legumes. It will change the way we think about the subject. Why do you ask?
Oh, nothing.
Now, what was that? Have you heard that before, Summerlee?
I haven't.
So many plants. So many creatures we haven't recorded.
But so many we have, Challenger. The world of science will applaud you.
And you, Summerlee. And you. Our eyes have beheld great wonders.
I take one last long look at the jungle. The glittering, living lake. The dreamland where we had dared much, suffered much, and learned much. Then I see blazing torches.
What?
My people, they come for us. Oh dear, oh dear. Hurry!
You bastard! Get off, you filthy thing!
Guard!
So, there are chinks in even the sturdiest armor. It is a beautiful dry tunnel with smooth gray walls covered with native symbols. Curved roof which arches over our heads and white glistening sand beneath our feet.
The tunnel forks. There's no fork marked on the map. We have to choose. I say right.
Left.
Left. Take this one.
Right it is. Come on.
Along we hurry in the semi-darkness, winding steadily downwards until a sheet of silvery flame fills the far end of the tunnel. At first I cannot see it for what it is,
The moon, by George!
We're through. You've done it, Koros.
But not quite. There's 100-foot drop to the base of the cliffs.
Oh, they found us.
We've enough rope.
Oh, it's flimsy.
Double it, man, and loop it round this rock. Go. You first, Diana.
The Indians, they're here.
So they are, bless them. Go, Diana. I shall make sure Carois isn't in trouble. We are in his debt, and I am duty-bound to see that debt is paid.
Roxton, you make sure you come back. Do you understand?
Diana slides down the rope.
You could come with us, Carois.
You cannot stay my world, and I cannot leave in your world.
We'll not forget you.
The boyish figure disappears entirely in the embrace of Challenger. Then Challenger slides down the rope. The Indians pause some 20 feet down the tunnel, while Lord John Roxton stands as still as if he were carved from stone, his rifle held across his chest.
Off you go, young Malone.
But I hang on the lip of the cave. If the Indians rush Roxton, they could draw Summerlee and Challenger up like hooked fish, or send us all to our doom. The faces of the Indians are unreadable. What actually happens will stay with me until my memories crumble to dust.
Here, Carois. Take it. Take the thunder and the lightning. Ammunition. Breach like so. Trigger, thus. You've seen me use it. Careful. Now it's yours, Carois, a gift from the gods. Feel these notches? If you were ever tempted to use this, and do not know whether it is right, feel those notches.
Kuja.
And think.
Kuja. 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 Kuja Moko.
The Indians bow. Roxton bows back. Then he turns and, without a glance behind him, heads towards me. I slide down the rope at speed. He follows.
Gotcha!
Up in the mouth of the cave. Curois, he's holding up like a trophy, a holy grail. Your rifle, Roxton. And the Indians are bowing to him. What happened up there?
We set off our worlds. But far more to the point, Dr. Summerlee, I had the presence of mind to keep your bundle of legumes safe. Here.
Oh, much obliged, Lord John.
Wait! That box there, that must go in my cabin. In fact, I'll take you there myself. Yes. No, thank you.
I didn't see you there. Such an intense look on your face. What is it?
It is time, John Roxton. Time to tell me about the rifle. About the Putumayo River.
Ah. The rubber trade in Brazil, I think I once told you, is horribly profitable. The opera house, remember? All built on the most cruel exploitation of the humblest workers. Slaves, really. Tortures, burnings alive, mutilations.
Go on.
I took it upon myself to bring some rough justice to the perpetrators. Each of the nicks on the rifle was for someone who murdered or tortured a slave. The last one was for Pedro Lopez, the most savage of them. He was in the employ of the biggest of the rubber companies. I shot him through the right eye in a backwater of the river.
Look at me, Roxton. Yours is surely not a crime beyond forgiveness. Just as many would say was done. But how did you come upon these men?
You don't understand. At the time, I too was in the employ of that rubber company. Dear God, the shame of it.
Enough. Roxton, enough. You clutch the ship's rail as though you would fall to the bottom of the ocean if you let go. I'm going to take your hand off the rail. Finger by finger. Like so. Finger by finger. You hold on to me, Roxton. I won't let you fall.
Good. You've not seen Summerlee, have you? We're supposed to be exchanging notes.
I have, as a matter of fact. Just seen her on the upper deck. Yes, I'm sure. I'm sure she will join you in due course to exchange notes.
Malone!
Good evening, Challenger.
Did I say something to offend the fellow?
I suppose it is time to apologize, for I have practiced a number of deceptions upon you in this journal. The descriptions given of our journey to Maple Whiteland, while accurate in every essential, change every possible clue as to the location of that place. Names have been changed, geography too. No one, from the most careful study of what I have written, could come within 1,000 miles of our unknown land, or come within 1,000 miles of knowing all that I have lost.
Scribble, 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 Mr. Malone.
Oh, you surprised me. That little smile. It is not to be borne, but bear it I must, and smile in return.
Sorry.
No, no.
Let me put that another way. I am so very sorry, Edward.
Her hand on my upper right arm. Her eyes filling my eyes. Onwards, Malone. Scrum down. Match depends on me.
I'm put out, Dr. Summerlee. Were you by any chance reading over my shoulder?
I confess I was. You are so absorbed. And those? Those are wireless messages?
Every paper, every news agency is offering huge sums of money for even the briefest account of our experiences.
You're not tempted by the offers?
No. I'm loyal to the Gazette, for the time being. I think, too, one day I could write a book. Perhaps a book of some seriousness that could do justice to what we found in that plateau. Our journey. It has made me think. Who I am, what I really want to be.
Yes, Malone. It was quite a journey, wasn't it?
Ladies and gentlemen, I and my companions have returned from the Amazon, and we have seen wonders. I will ask Dr. Summerlee to join me in a moment, but I don't want to show you sketches. I'm tired of the shadows on the cave wall. I want to show you what's outside the cave. I want to show you something real.
From behind the lectern, Challenger picks up a wooden box.
Hatched just 7 days ago, or 60 million years ago. Whichever way you look at it. An infant pterodactyl. There. Taken from the Amazonian plateau as an egg. Hatched and reared by myself. My thanks to Lord John Roxton, who helped me seize the egg.
Pleasure, my dear chap.
He's a lovely specimen. Shh. There. I've been feeding him on mice. Though we'll have to move on to something bigger, won't we? Now, He's quite sprightly, but, sprightly, as I say.
The creature perches upon Challenger's wrist as a bird of prey might. But no one in this hall has ever seen a creature like this.
Yeah. Now, I shall make a few observations about Maple Whiteland. Please, calm yourselves. No.
The pterodactyl shoots out of Challenger's grasp, circles the audience. Once. Twice.
The skylight! Close the skylight!
A small, ferocious face stares at the audience, and then is gone.
There you are, Challenger. I'm so glad to find you in the crowd. A tragedy. Apparently none of the photographs of your extraordinary creature developed properly.
Well, Vice-Chancellor, perhaps the world we found should stay lost.
But what disastrous news about Dr. Summerlee.
What news is that?
She's resigned from the Senate of the University. Resigned from half a dozen influential committees.
Did she say why?
Said she wanted to pursue science in the field. She said, I quote her, "I want to be a scientist again." Extraordinary.
Did she just?
Well, here she comes. Ask her yourself. Dashing couple, aren't they? I must run. I'm in demand.
Summerlee. Roxton. Joy to you both.
Dear chap.
Thank you, Edward. What I still want to know, when we were at the Albert Hall, which idiot left a skylight open?
I have the honor to be that idiot.
Explain.
Well, the thing I noted in my studies with Carois of the Pterodactyl Hatchery is an immense innate capacity in the young to locate and return to the nest, even after long journeys.
So your creature is on its way back to the plateau.
You can do better than that, Malone.
Let me think. It's nest. It was born in your home. It's returned to Enmore Park Gardens, where our adventure began. What a thing.
You see, while I wanted to prove the truth of what we found, I wanted to conceal it, too. A creature like my pterodactyl, people would want to turn it into a funfair exhibit. I should like you to read over my initial notes, Summerlee. Give me your comments. You have some reservation?
No, not at all. My pleasure.
Good. That reminds me. A thought came to me a moment ago, Malone. A title for your book.
Yes?
The Lost World.
Has a certain ring to it.
Will you paint us kindly in your book?
I shall do my best to paint all of us accurately. Faults as well as strengths.
Oh dear.
Kindly too. Even in places with love.
In The Lost World by Arthur Conan Doyle, dramatized by Chris Harold, Professor Challenger was played by David Robb, Dr. Diana Summerlee by Jasmine Hyde, Lord John Roxton by Jamie Glover, Malone by Jonathan Forbes, Carois by Vinicia Salas, Meldrum by Sean Baker, and The Indian Tribesman by Milton Lopez. The Lost World was directed by Marilyn Imrie.
And there'll be drama next weekend in more ways than one. Here's a taste of something extra.
You're blathering, Bernard.
Yes, Minister.
Why are you blathering, Bernard?
It's my job, Minister.
BBC Radio 4 Extra. The countdown has begun.
Back to you this afternoon. After the news, Mariela Frostrop will talk to the author of Brick Lane, Monica Ali, about her new book inspired by Princess Diana. That's open book in a couple of minutes.